This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap after Liverpool 9, Bournemouth 0. We can just have a second on that. I've been doing this now since 2011 and I haven't had a 9-0. It's worth pointing that out. You don't get that many 9-0s. And it was joyous in the fact that the players were into the idea it was a 9-0 as well. I think it's fair to say. And that, to me, Phil, remains the sort of the funniest part in a lot of ways of the game, of the enterprise, is, for instance, Virgil, when it goes 9-0, getting the ball and then shouting at his teammates who were celebrating because they had 4 minutes to try to make it 10. And he was like, why aren't we doing this? Because you don't get many of them either.
Yeah, you see, I remember when Leicester beat Southampton 9-0, I remember Johnny Evans doing exactly the same. And I think that was at 7-0, he went in the back of the net for the ball because it was about 25 minutes to go. So they know there's a record there that is basically very little. If you win 10-0, it's very likely anyone's ever going to break that.
Possibly in your lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. No one's going to win a league game 11-0, are they? So you know that record is going to stand for a very, very long time. And Van Dijk has obviously had the idea that I'm getting that ball, we're going to try and win this 10-0. And I mean, Milner nearly sort of misses a cross in that the keeper just pushes behind. And I'm sat next to you, wasn't I? I was banging into the idea that Bobby Clark scored the 10th. Just for in 30 years' time, someone looks back at Liverpool winning a league game 10-0, looks at the goal scorers and go, oh yeah, who on earth is that?
Well, you say that.
He might be amazing, I don't know, but.
But he's got 3 Ballon d'Ors, yeah, so we'll play
exactly.
This clip back.
Yeah, yeah. Happily. You do that. That's not an own, is it? I'd be delighted with that one.
He's a big lad for 17, isn't he? Like, to be fair. I mean, I didn't expect to get onto Bobby Clark so early in a 9-0, but he didn't score it. But I like the size of him.
He's, I like the size. Well, I like the size of the two young lads who came on.
Yeah.
Bacevic is a unit as well.
Yeah, but I knew he was big.
Yeah.
But Bobby Clark took me by surprise a little bit.
It was, Sean, it just sort of gets out of hand, and I think it's a combination of a couple of things, and this doesn't happen, all these things don't happen very often, which is a side turns up and they're massively superior to the opposition, which is what Liverpool are to Bournemouth. Then you get long shots hit the back of the net, if we count Elliott's as well in there, set-piece goals go in, own goals go in. So you're a bit fortunate, you're well better, and you're determined to make a point. It's quite a confluence of factors that suddenly happened there for Liverpool versus Bournemouth.
Yep, it is, and it was a huge relief, I think, because, I mean, like a load of people, I think I was almost in the mindset that we're never going to win a football match ever again. So it was quite good to be in a position where actually we are quite good, and we are going to win again, and we're going to win quite emphatically. Just on Van Dijk getting the ball back, do you think this is going to be where, like, we get the taste for it and we do want to win 10-0 now, because like we know this team likes to go after records and goes after win things. Like you were saying, there's not going to be a team that wins a league game 11-0. Well, we play Everton next week, don't we? So maybe, but no, it was great that everything came together. It was unfortunate for Bournemouth that everything came together, but you know, we're not here to talk about them. So brilliant. I'm made up it happened and I'm very relieved.
Excellent stuff. A little bit of prologue there. I didn't tell you who was on the show. It's Sean O'Donnell, it's Phil Blundell, and it's John Gibbons. Just get excited by goals. Excited by goals. Goals are worth being excited by. The other thing about it, John, is when you say this has been coming, I'm not sort of just referring to this season. I actually feel like this has been coming for 3 or 4 years, that someone at Anfield was going to get whacked. That's why I do really feel sorry for Bournemouth. They've almost took the hide in that. I can name another 6 or 7 teams here and say they were at some point going to get it, you know, over going down for across a number of years. I've felt like one of these has been on the cards for about 3 seasons.
Yeah, I think that that's fair, Neil, and I think it's a combination of factors why it happens on Saturday, and one of them is they just don't let up. They just sort of keep going, and there's several reasons why there's not more 9-0s, but one of them is that the teams normally sort of take the foot off the gas, and we absolutely did not. We just sort of kept going and going, and you know, we went right up to half time, and then we came up to the second half and scored straight away again, and I think it was that was a real sort of, you know, show of intent, really. And I did feel for the Bournemouth fans there, because there must have been a temptation to nip out to half time and think, you know, maybe they're all on buses.
Do you know what? Do you know, I had a look before the game, by the way. Do you know what time some of their buses left Bournemouth? 4 a.m.
Wow, I wasn't going to guess that.
Honestly,
early.
I couldn't figure out how it happened, but it did.
So when they all stayed at half time and then straight away, you know, lad kicks it in the net, like, that's a real sort of kicker, isn't it? But we just sort of kept on, and we've got that quality where we can rip teams apart, and if other sides, you know, start to feel sorry for themselves, quite naturally, by the way. I mean, who wouldn't feel sorry for yourself when that sixth goes in, straight after half time, right in front of the cop, and then some prick goes and grabs the ball and runs back again. You know, that's a time to feel sorry for yourself. Yeah. Scott Park is your manager. There's so much to feel down about. You know, so I get it. You know, when we're in that mood and the opposition looking a bit ragged, like, we can't just score at will, and that's what we do.
You're saying, Phil, you know, and I saw the sense I do agree with it, but there's one thing that makes me not necessarily agree with you on the idea that no one will do 10 or no one will do 11 in the current environment, and it's this. And I don't believe it is an advantage for the bigger sides, but I do think five subs plays a part. The reason why is, if you can bring five players on, many of whom might have something to prove, they might want to get into a manager's selection. The idea, I think, of letting up becomes a little, you know, Carvalho, when I want to talk about Carvalho. Carvalho is a great example. He comes on as a half-time sub for Elliot, and he's got 45 minutes to say to everyone, and also to score his first goal for Liverpool, if you know what I mean. Like, he'll have got onto that pitch thinking, I can get my debut Liverpool goal here at the Kop end. That can come for me. That's the way it transpires. I think there is a little thing that if you've got a side that's got something to prove, and some players who've got something to prove, and you're well on top in a game, and you can swap half your outfield players, there is a chance we might get a few more, at least 6s, 7s, and 8s this season.
Yeah, that is entirely possible, but at the same time, we had 12 shots on target and scored 8 goals from those 12 shots on target. So it's basically, it was a situation where pretty much everything went in, and then they kicked one in for us as well, because scoring with 2/3 of your shots on target just isn't something that teams do, really, is it? Let's be perfectly honest, and that's not doing down any level of the performance or anything like that. It's
showing how important it is to finish well.
Exactly. Good finishing is the most important
both
thing in football, isn't it?
Target, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Well, that is an absolutely completely fair point. I hadn't thought of that when I thought that point to him yet, but yeah, that is true. I think it was Daniel Story's piece this morning where he went, it could have been 13 and no one would have complained, and that is completely true, despite the fact that I've said about the shots on target, and that is that it was just a mad game of football, really, wasn't it? In terms of it was done at 3:07, like, completely and utterly done at 3:07, and that is not something that you can do every week or you should take lightly or anything like that, because to have the 3 points in the bag before anybody else in the Premier League scored, I think, is ridiculous. Yeah.
There is lots to pick up on, and we'll pick on important little bits and pieces, Sean, but the two I want to start off with are Elliot and Carvalho. They each play a half. They're both, just to me, very, very exciting. They're technically terrific, but they also seem tactically switched on. And that's you know, at the age that they're both at, to be playing for this Liverpool side on merit. I think there might be a bit of a chat around how close Carvalho might be to the odd appearance if it wasn't for the injuries. But it feels to me like he's committed to Elliot, the manager, to a quite significant degree. They're both there or thereabout. The goals are good for them as well. The goals should settle any further nerves they've got.
Yeah, they both look like really switched on lads, don't they? Like, I think just listening to Harvey Elliott talk after the game, he seemed like such an intelligent lad for such a young age. You know, he's saying all the right things, and as you've touched on there, most importantly, he's doing all the right things on the pitch. I think you can go back to last season to see what Klopp thinks about him. He starts, you know, up until the injury, he starts most games, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think he might have even started every game until he got injured last season. Because it wasn't that many, was it? But you can see that Klopp absolutely backs him. I thought the goal yesterday was brilliant, and that goal's been coming for him because, you know, he's got that shot in his locker. Positionally, as you've just said there, he seems like he's got a really good relationship with Mo Salah, and I feel like Salah likes him. Salah likes that he's willing to run beyond Salah, or that Elliot's willing to run beyond Salah. And as for Carvalho, you know, I'm made up for him scoring, because that's been coming, because in his short appearances that he's had this year, or flurries off the bench, he's looked really dangerous, so I'm made up for him.
I think that relationship between him and Salah that Sean just mentioned then is actually really important, how getting the best out of both of them, because it creates a lot of space for
both of them. Like, I like Jordan Henderson, for example, but when Jordan Henderson plays close to Salah, Jordan Henderson's not quite as likely to affect you from a attacking point of view as Harvey Elliott is, whether it's a use of the ball or his ability to create something out of nothing. So it creates a bit of space for the both of them, and Salah particularly. Like, Salah finds himself in space quite a lot, I thought, on Saturday, down that right-hand side. There's a lot of balls that come down. We got the ball to him quicker and got men around him quicker than we have done so far this season. I think part of that was, I think Gomez moves the ball out quicker as a centre-back. He'll miss a man out and pass it somewhere. That helped. Champ was able to get 10 yards further up the pitch, I thought, because of how Bournemouth were, and Elliott was closer to him. And these players were closer to each other, and it made it so much easier.
One's got to go outside, though, Phil. Yeah, now Salah's starting outside a bit more. I thought it was a little bit less in this one, but Salah's starting outside. But in order to create the space, one of them does have to go outside. One of them has to say, "I'm happy to go onto my weaker foot here."
Yeah, and Elliott did that a couple of times as well. There's one where I think I said to you, I don't know what he was doing there. You remember, he was trying to get a corner, and I was like, "Yeah, that's literally what he was trying to do." And he's done a lovely bit of skill, and ultimately, he went out for a goal kick, but he was there, he knew what he was trying to do, and it was just good to see.
Harvey feels like he's positionally set. Fabio is quite the opposite to John, and I think that might be the case throughout sort of much of the season. That's one of my sort of takeaways from them. I feel as though Fabio could pop up anywhere. I think he plays three positions in this game, in the whole second half, to be honest with you. Whereas it does feel as though they're very, very committed to Elliott as the one in this sort of midfield shape who's going to turn 4-3-3 into 4-2-4.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It's an interesting one with Carvalho, isn't it, in that are they still trying to figure out his best position, or are they, you know, allowing him just a little bit of a freedom when he goes onto the pitch? It does feel like, you know, Elliott's going on with quite a specific instructions on how to play and the link up with Salah and how he's doing it, whereas Carvalho has got more of a free role and is able to influence and in different ways and in different areas, and whether that's because, you know, that's getting the best out of each of them, or whether it's just because the managers have more time to work with Elliott, so you know, he's more of a converted midfielder, isn't he, Elliott, whereas Carvalho, you know, he might still, but I still think working out where his best position is. It's funny because Klopp said about him, he was asked about him starting, wasn't he, and he said, well, he's knocking on the door for the start, but he says he likes him off the bench because of the versatility that he has. You know, he's able to, you know, be an attacking midfield option or a wide option and stuff like that. And so they're almost saying his versatility means that they quite enjoy holding him back because they can put him on and use him in different ways, use him with three forwards like they did for the start of the second half, but then he does sort of push on later. And so it's a strength for him at the moment. At some point, as you get older, you know, you don't want to be...
It's got to nail down, hasn't it, at some point?
Yeah, but at the moment, I think it's going to get him more minutes. He's featured in every game so far, and that's partly because of injuries, but also partly because I think he is able to come on and do different things and you know, affect games in different ways.
Diaz... Phil, movement looked very different and he was involved across the pitch, I thought. I actually thought it's not far away from being able to describe him as unleashed. It's easy, it's a 9-0. He scores with practically his first touch. These are all factors. Mm. Liverpool are pairing, you know, this is all in there and present. But it felt to me like we managed to unlock something that we maybe hadn't seen in terms of his ongoing performance right the way across the pitch in the whole of the second half. Sorry, whole of the second half of the pitch throughout all of the game.
Yeah, it was the system looked more like I understood what was going on than it has done against, for example, United or Fulham or Palace. And partially that's linked to the bit where Andy Robertson and Chandler just appear as a number nine. I can sort of see what that's about now in terms of it enables whoever's playing up front to, you know, get space created for them, or they're able to go into a slightly different position and impact the game in a different way. And I thought Diaz was a bit like that yesterday. There's a few times he was popping up right hand side through the middle. I think it's really interesting that one of the areas that Mane used to get praised for was his aerial ability, and no one's really thought this about Diaz. He scores two headers on Saturday. He scores a header away to Villarreal. He scores a header in a slightly different circumstances at Brighton when he nearly gets his head taken off. But there's an ability to use his head, which is really important, because there's there's one thing you've in your agenda about Elliot and Carvalho, and it's the height, and Diaz is actually quite big. So if you haven't, if he's an aerial threat, it really does add something to it, and it enables you to have sort of smaller players like Thiago, Elliot, Carvalho, and it's a different area. And he just looks really versatile at a variety of a genuine variety of things about him.
It feels like, in lots of ways, Sean, we know what the really good Mo Salah season looks like for this Liverpool and in general. We know what, and we got a wonderful reminder of it: the Roberto Firmino glorious performances. Diaz, if this isn't a conversation about how much he's shown us, because he's shown us everything, I think it's fair to say. But seeing it in the team setting that gets the result, the ball ends up in the back of the net, Liverpool basically score more goals than the opposition. I think that's almost not quite season defining, but in terms of how we attack, getting the best version of that, I think could basically define the level of success we can have in the opposition half if we can absolutely unlock the very best of Diaz.
Yeah, absolutely. I love him. I really do. I think he's a player that when you see him in the flesh live, you realise how good he is, because of his energy levels just never seem to drop. He always seems to be the most, you know, the most energetic player on the pitch. I feel like he's not grown into the season, because he's been great. He was great in the first half against Fulham. I feel like he's, you can see him getting more confidence with his movements and what he's doing. So obviously scoring goals helps that. I feel like his, because he hasn't played with Firmino much, so I feel like it, like sort of getting more of a relationship, yeah, with Firmino is helping him. I just think he's such a good player, and as you say, if we can unlock the best out of him and get the more unleashed version and the more clinical version, the more ruthless version, then what a player we've got in our hands.
Yeah, he's great. He's a fighter, isn't he? He just fights on the pitch all the time, and you feel like he's, every time he steps onto the field from the first minute to the last, or however long he, you know, he lasts on the pitch, he's going to give absolutely everything he's got. And you know, he's always looking to threat, and he's always looking for ways to make the defender's life a nightmare, really. And I'm pleased that there was more to his game in terms of, you know, you were a bit critical, Neil, of the setup in the last couple of games, of just how wide the forwards were. Whereas straight away, he scored header right in front of the goal, and you think, oh great, today's going to be sort of a little bit different. Really, he's, you know, Klopp talked, didn't he, about, you know, being a pain to play against. He said we need to go back to being the worst team in the country to play against. Mm. And Luis Diaz is very much part of that.
And that's interesting, John, because I think we sort of in our minds, and all football supporters would, not just Liverpool supporters, you sort of think about that when you haven't got the ball. Like, how are you going to be gnarly? How are you going to tackle? How are you going to do this, that and the other? I think Diaz is a really good example of being horrible to play against when he's got the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not just the idea of him threatening direct on goal in a sort of a Salah-ish way, but just in a, well, how am I ever meant to get the ball back off him now? Yeah. You feel like he's bruising opposition players when he's got the ball. That's, you know, that's the strength of him, as you know, and it's not about him being massive or broad. It's the idea that he's just got this sort of physical elasticity that means that, well, you can't get near him, or if you do get near him, you're going to get hurt.
Well, there's one point where he picks the ball up and he's in our own half and just decides to sort of cut inside, and he's running through midfield and about two of them try and foul him, and they just bounce off him, and then he plays the ball down the right hand side and we're off again, and we probably fucking score from that, because that's what we get. But you know, he's unleashed a trend down the right hand side and we're away, and he just, you know, he's not much to look at, is he, physically? Do you know what I mean? I mean Sean's right, he's sort of taller than you think when you see him in the flesh, but you know, he looks sort of skin and bones, doesn't he? But he's rock hard, and yeah, it's on and off the ball, really. He's just always threatening, he's just always looking for ways to hurt the opposition, to get us going, to create something himself, or to move us up the pitch. And you know, he's going to be a really big player, I think, for Liverpool moving forward, because I think there's a lot more to come from him as well. I think most of us agree.
I think so as well. Want to talk about my guy, Joe Gomez, Phil. It's odd to feature a centre-back in a 9-0 win, but you just said it before about him passing the ball brilliantly, missing players out. I think that's an important thing. If Trent Alexander-Arnold's going to come and tuck in, the thing he shouldn't do is at times get in the way. He doesn't want to have to take a touch. If he can step over the ball and let it move on to the next man, then suddenly Liverpool are in better nick. And I think he did pass it brilliantly again. I think they tried to play on him. He felt they felt he was there out over the course of the game. Games are going to come thick and fast for him now. I think there's every chance of that. We hope that Matip will be back at some point soon. But I think Jurgen Klopp will be determined to try to commit to him, and especially if he's putting in performances like he does on Saturday.
I agree. I think there's a situation where Matip is fourth choice by the end of the season, just on age grounds. And there's been a lot of talk about the age profile of the squad. Matip feels like a fairly easy win in terms of moving one out. So that feels like a real opportunity for Gomez and Konate. And Gomez has looked very good the last couple of weeks. I think the own goal, by the way, superb for the own goal. He wins the ball back on the edge of their box.
Yeah,
he's a centre-back and he's winning the ball back on the edge of their box. And the goal, the ball's in the back of the net 3 seconds later. It's genuinely very good what he does. And he's aggressive whilst also being able to play on the back foot and be aware of what's going on. His passing is...
It's a range of passing range now, of which passing. Is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I think I thought it was quite interesting that at the start of last season when they weren't playing Van Dijk, that it was him on the left. And he's obviously not going to offer what Van Dijk offers with the ball because he's not that good. Because nobody is. He's one of the best passers of a ball, full stop, in football. Never mind centre-backs. So Gomez was still told to go and try and do that. And he's able to play that cross-field ball that Van Dijk does. He's got that in his locker.
It's interesting you're watching him play it right to left now as well. It's not just the idea that he gets it out of his foot on the right and he fades it around towards, say, Salah. You could see him doing it the other way. And I thought that you saw that against United as well. His passing was one of the few bright spots against United. He's got this range in both directions and along the deck.
Yeah. It was the same when he came on against Palace. It's not just that he's good. He moves it. It goes quickly. It's not... He's not wondering with it. It's into feet. The person's got the ability to turn. The person's got the ability to possibly just lay it off to the side. He gives them options with the way he hits it because the other team haven't reacted quickly enough by the time it's there. He's been very good since he came back, and there's a real opportunity now, I think, for him to go back to where we were in, 2019, 2020, when he was first choice alongside Van Dijk, and he was brilliant, and then he gets the injury, obviously. He was still first choice at the start of the season. He gets injured. And he's got a real opportunity, I think, now to make an argument that is his place.
The manager is into his meritocracy, and he's also into the idea of if you've got the shirt, either someone's got to be exceptional to take it from you in training, or when they get an opportunity themselves, or alternatively, you've got to make a real mess of it to lose it. It feels now like he's got the shirt for me. I think, obviously, we know that it's so many games. It's now 19 between now and the World Cup with an international break. We know that, Sean. So there will be times he's dipped out, but I feel as though he is now the man in the possession.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because you think about that positional thing, I think more than any other position, it's centre-half, isn't it? Because Gomez was first choice, wasn't he? He's our Premier League winning first choice centre-half. So if he's going to be that this year again, then brilliant. I feel like he does back the player who's got the shirt. He backed Matip to the hilt last year, and rightly so, by the way, because Matip was brilliant last year. I just feel that if you get in and you play as well as you can do it next to Van Dijk, show the improvement that he's shown, then I don't see an argument to put Matip in ahead of him when he gets back. I feel like he's got the shirt now, and I hope that he keeps it as long as he can.
They're going to have to manage all of these players, John. It's one of the reasons why the injuries are a problem. It's not just the idea of who they're picking. It's not even just the idea of what they can do off the bench. It's that, you know, the schedule is daunting from this point. There's no argument around that. So I don't think it isn't as though we're never going to see certain players ever again. But I do feel as though I like the idea that Liverpool settle on these are my two centre-backs for every game that I feel is crucial, and I feel Gomez is there.
Yeah, I think they will be careful because it's funny with injuries, isn't it? It's really bad at the moment, but and everyone says, oh, we need to get a couple back, but it could get worse, do you know what I mean? And we've seen that, you know, a couple of seasons ago in the season that was, you know, almost end up being a write-off was just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, someone else would go down, and so the manager will be conscious of that. You know, it's not just about getting players back. It's protecting the ones you've got. You'll know that Gomez, unfortunately, you know, does have a history with injuries. You know, that they're still, I think, a little bit conscious of Van Dijk, although he feels like he's, you know, he's through the point now where they have to be sort of really
likely to have a big World Cup. We'll want a big World Cup Van Dijk, John. This is one of my little Van Dijk things. Is it wouldn't surprise me if he maybe misses a couple more games because we can't expect Holland to manage his minutes.
No.
If you sort of know what I mean. It wouldn't surprise me if we maybe, certainly if the Champions League group goes well at the start, it wouldn't surprise me if you see a little bit of Virgil sitting out here and there.
Yeah, and that's fine because the quality is there, you know, as long as, you know, Konate is not too far away. But at the moment, you know, the two of them are looking good, and Joe Gomez, I'm delighted for, because, you know, he has been a big part of what's made us great over the last sort of few years when he has been available. You know, and he's done the full journey, hasn't he? You know, he was a Rodgers sign, and has done the full sort of journey with us, and is one of the few to kind of survive, really. Yeah. You know, people have moved on. Sometimes their choice, largely Jürgen's. but it's Joe. Joe's one of the last men standing, and hopefully for many more years to come, because I think he's brilliant.
I think the World Cup's a really interesting point, actually, because not so much for Van Dijk, more for Gomez.
Yeah, himself.
I wouldn't underestimate how the importance of the World Cup for Joe Gomez and getting in that squad. We know he's got a good relationship with Southgate. Southgate really, really likes him because he played for him in the younger ages teams. I think that might be a massive factor in Joe Gomez's motivation. And listen, don't get me wrong, obviously he doesn't need any motivation to play centre-half for Liverpool, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's in the back of his mind as well.
He really likes himself, Keith, doesn't he? He did pick him when he was when he first sort of got in, and especially if Southgate wants to play a three. I think he'd be brilliant.
I was looking last night and found out what odds he is. It's incredible to go to the World Cup. Like I said, when I told you on Saturday, not right, it's bigger.
What is it?
What do you reckon it is, out of curiosity?
Just to be in the squad?
Just to be in the squad.
Six to one. I was going to say 8 to 1.
12 to 1.
Is he?
Like, he's a bigger price than Tottenham's second choice.
It won't be by the time this goes out, because all of us are going to go.
Tottenham's second choice goalkeeper's 5 to 1. He's 12 to 1.
That's crazy.
I don't know. Tottenham's
exactly.
Goalkeeper is.
Fraser Forster.
Is it?
But he must be about 8th in line to play in goal for England.
All right then. Redemption arcs other than Phil's. and Roberto Firmino, John. When what works, works. Listen, we know about the sheer quality of both. And they are also at different phases, I think, of their careers and also of the Liverpool careers. But they're so unorthodox as footballers. And when what they do works, opposition sides have just got no answer to it. And I think that, you know, from a Liverpool point of view, we're likely to see less Firmino over the course of the campaign than we are Trent Alexander-Arnold. But I think finding ways to ensure we can unlock what they do to the best of our ability is really, really important. I think we're still finding our way through where this season is and where some of these players are at and what it is we're precisely trying to do. But when these two are playing, we want to make sure we're getting the best versions of them, which we haven't been doing so far.
Yeah, I think Firmino, it's funny with Firmino because he has a brilliant game, but there's still a couple of times where you can see he's not quite where he was. There was a through ball that I think Salah plays, and he's a little bit on his heels, but also he's just a bit slow to get there, really, and it goes through.
Nunez or Jota score, basically.
And there's one in the second half as well where you can see. So it's not just a pace thing; it's his acceleration off the mark that probably isn't coming back. Let's face it. So you know he's probably not one who. You know, you necessarily want to be, you know, I'm not going to sit here now and say I want him as my first choice nine for the rest of the season for every game, because I don't think that is the case. But what we did see is, you know, there's still such an intelligent, clever, effective footballer in there. And like you say, Neil, it's how do you get the best of it? And I think, you know, almost saying to him, you know, you don't need to influence football games quite as much as what you used to, you know. At Old Trafford, he's coming so deep, and he's actually doing really good work. I think, I don't think he has a bad game at Old Trafford. I just think he stood in the wrong place for most of the game. You know, almost saying, like, you know, you've gotten to the point of your career now where we don't need as many touches from you. You know, what we need from you is intelligence. What we need from you is to be, you know, in the right place to affect these football games, you know, thinking about your teammates, which you will do naturally anyway, looking to get them in there, but looking to pounce, you know, that his first goal, you know, is brilliant, isn't it? Because he's there, you know, it's a real slice of luck. It's one of them where when you're overseeing it, you're like, fucking hell, we could have done with that against Palace. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we don't need the luck now. Yeah. You know, it's like a cross that ends up just sort of looping, but it's a boss finish. Yeah. And the point is, it's a great finish and he's there to finish it rather than stood on the day. And I was like, oh, you know, fucking hell, that was unlucky. Do you know what I mean? Instead, he's sort of there. So I think for him, it's just making sure he's a lot more in that number nine position. He's not trying to be sort of here, there and everywhere and thinking, oh, I can use me energy and me acceleration to get up there when I need to, because he's not got that anymore.
I think where we want him, Sean, when he's playing, is we want him closer to the D than the centre circle. And then from there, then he can vacate the space and people can fill the space that he vacates. But he's got to be vacating the space in the right position, that's as John's cool, yeah. saying. It's got to be, like, he's got to be vacating the space when it's actually useful, not vacating the space when it makes everyone else's football playing life much harder. And that's the trick for him, closer to the D than the centre circle. And then people can come in
into where it is you leave.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's that, but there's also an element of like us not playing to his strength. So, you know, you think about Old Trafford, how wide Diaz and Salah were for the whole game on probably one of the biggest pitches in the league, leaving him isolated in the middle where we know he hasn't got the pace he's got anymore. So he's got to go back to the day because he wants to get the ball, he wants to keep hold of the ball, he wants to try and influence things. And he's probably frustrated himself. And with John, I don't think he had a bad game against Old Trafford. I just don't think we played to his strengths. I think yesterday, yes, it is a lot easier when you're playing at home to Bournemouth on a tighter pitch. But I feel like we did play to his strengths a bit more. We got him on the ball in the right places, as you say. He was in the right place a lot more. I think his relationship with Diaz was a lot better on Saturday than it has been this season. And I feel like he was just, you know, there's no player where more, if he's on it, then he's really on it, and if he's off it, you can really notice it. And I feel like he was definitely on it on Saturday.
It's a game for him. I think when you're playing the bottom 10 side at home, it really is the type of situation where he's one of the first names on the team sheet, not because he's better than X, Y or Z, but suitability for how the opponent's going to play. Bournemouth were never going to get up the pitch and play a high line and sort of squeeze him and remove the ability for him to go in behind, because that's just not how they play. So what they were going to do is they were going to stay deep, they were going to leave a lot of room for him to sort of operate in but still be dangerous at the same time. So that kind of game, you know, Palace was possibly not one, but then we play Wolves in a few weeks. I think Wolves will be a type of game for him, because I don't think Wolves will come and be aggressive in how they play. I think they'll be quite back foot and allow us to play in front of them. And you see how it benefits him, because he's got the ability
to... Two games against Rangers,
yeah,
possibly.
Exactly, yeah. There's just opportunities. And even then, there's a bit of luck involved. Like, ultimately, he gets an assist for that Harvey Elliott goal because he miscontrolled it. Like,
that was a great pass.
It sometimes just goes your way, and that's he got a goal and an assist because something went his way. Great.
On Trent, Phil, it's... You know how brilliant he is? I think... For Liverpool, the difficulty we're going to have is sides are going to want to attack us. We've got to acknowledge this. I mean, this has always been the funny thing for me, going all the way back since 2017, since you buy Van Dijk. Buying Van Dijk does loads of things, and most of them are really positive, and most of them are really positive for most of the squad. What it does is it puts a big arrow on the side that isn't Virgil van Dijk's, because he very quickly establishes himself as just that good, first and foremost. Secondly, because Trent does want to be as unorthodox as he does, that also both creates problems for the opposition, but it means Liverpool have got to have a plan around it. Now, I think Liverpool, as much as possible, dealing with those situations as strongly as they can on the one hand, but also escaping the fear of it and understanding what it is they're trying to do. I think you've got to see a bit more of that against Bournemouth. You need to see it tested, I think, a little bit more than Bournemouth were going to be able to do. But seeing what it is that he's, again, meant to be doing in this side, I thought was really, really good to see.
Yeah, one thing Van Dijk also does that disadvantages him, he got Liverpool 5-10 yards up the pitch.
Yeah.
And that means there's space to run into somewhere. And when Trent is playing even higher, that's the area of the space, and he ends up looking like he's really isolated and really poor a lot of the time. And it's sort of quite often by design. It's like the way we happily let teams shoot from outside the box. We're giving you an area to hurt us, and it's a gamble. We just accept that this might happen, and we go from there. But Trent is it's the most unorthodox position I think I've ever seen anyone play, really, because it's part centre mid, it's part right winger, it's mostly on paper right back. It's incredibly complex, and I don't think he gets enough credit for how he's doing something that is completely alien to the sport, really. It's not just a bit difficult for him, it's a position that just doesn't exist anywhere else, and he's doing this thing, and it's phenomenal what he's doing. And sometimes it's not going to look right because of what we're asking.
The interesting thing too, it's Cancelo, and Cancelo is nowhere near as weird, and also when he plays left back, he's coming in on his right foot all the time as well. You know, whereas and Cancelo only tends to do it when he plays left back. They have Walker be a lot more orthodox, obviously. City, the nearest thing to it's Cancelo, and as I say, I just don't think it's even as weird for Cancelo.
No, it's not. It's like, it fascinates me more than any role in football, to be perfectly honest, in terms of how we've got into position where he does it, how he does it, how it fits in with the rest of the team. I think it impacts on what Mohamed Salah does, and he is one of the best players, if not the best player on the planet. And that is the kind of situation we're in, that we're doing this completely mad thing with a brilliant footballer that also impacts other players. And I don't really understand what they're doing. So what the opposition, who are playing once a week, are doing, how are they coming up with a plan to counteract this? Sometimes there'll be a situation where he finds himself in a situation where he can't get out of it, and it's really bad. But a lot of the time, it's such an advantage of a footballer like him doing what he's doing.
Yeah, I think he's a victim of his own crazy height, to be honest. I think he's come in for some really unfair criticism this year. We know, you know there's been some occasions where, you know, not most notably the goal at United, where you feel like, yeah, he needs to be doing more there. But actually, what he does, the stuff that he does with the ball, the stuff that he does defensively as well, because he's not a bad defender. That's just such a crazy thing for him to be labelled with. It's just stupid. Some of the stuff in the media that I've seen is just like, it's crazy. Honestly, it's mad. So I'm made up. He's actually getting the plaudits for what, you know, for his performance and his goal yesterday. Because we'd all love to see more of them go in. We'd all love to see him shoot more. And I think Saturday, topped it all off.
Yeah, he shows his quality, you know, and more at the weekend, doesn't he? And the defensive stuff's interesting because, you know, I think one-on-one defending, he's really strong. And you know, when wingers and stuff run past him, you know, he rarely gets beaten. The only thing is sometimes, you know, the things sort of behind him and things, is it? But listen, you know, the Mitrovic goal, I was quite critical walking out the ground, and then you sort of see it again, and then you see how well he's done. And listen, big centre forwards pulling onto the fullback and bashing headers in, like, it's the oldest goal in football, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It happens, you know, they're going away from the big massive Virgil van Dijk shaped lad and going on the one who
he actually deflects the ball, so it can't have been that wrong. He can't have done something that wrong, because actually he gets in the way of the ball and it goes in, because it's ultimately a deflection off his head. So even then, when he's getting criticised for stuff, he's probably not doing that much wrong. It just seems like an easy thing to say.
Yeah. I think it's with him at fullback, I think it's almost as long as he wants to play there, really. And I think, you know, there might become a point where, you know, they just feel like there isn't quite the appetite from him to be doing the other stuff. To be, you know, we might come to the point where he's just saying, you know what, I'm sick of fucking getting barged by Grox at Fulham, do you know what I mean? Can I just go and do that and I'll be boss of the brothers? And then everyone might go, yes, and. But as long as he's sort of happy to do it and got the appetite to do it, I think it's worth keeping going, because it's just this wild card threat, like you've all described, really. It's like, so we've got the three midfielders, and if one of them's like an Elliot and he's pushing on, and then you've got these forwards and two of them are wide, and you know, and the terrifying, but also the cutting in like they should be, and then, you know, centre forward, whoever that's going to be, and then and then there's this right back who's fucking bananas, and he might be the best player in the world, and then you can imagine the Bournemouth defenders listening to all that, go, what? Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to worry about all this, and there's the centre forwards and how they're attacking, and you're telling me there's this midfield breaking threat, and then the right back's like just playing four positions, and so it is the X factor that it gives us. I think, Trent, it is the complete X factor. So as long as you know he's happy with having to do, and by when I say happy, I don't think he's ever going to go, like, I'm refusing to be a defender anymore, but what I'm talking about is being, you know, loving defending. And that's what I'm referring to, really. I don't think, you know, I'm not talking about him, you know, throwing his toys out the pram and saying, I'm not playing right back anymore. Or I think it's just looking out for these things, like the thing at Old Trafford for the opener, which isn't great. You know, if they're creeping in more than more, then the manager at some point might have a decision to make here and saying, you know, how much should we be asking this lad to do? Because fucking hell, he's paid for right back longer than Maradona would have. and so you know, this isn't me criticising him at all, because I think his desire to win is so strong that he will always try and do everything he can from that position to help Liverpool win football games, and that's going to be defensively and attackingly. But just in those moments, you know, has he got that burning desire for a clean sheet? Right now he probably has, but whether that sort of continues. But for as long as that's there, you know, I'm not in a rush to move him whatsoever, because, as I say, you know, there's everything we do from an attacking point of view, and then you throw in Trent on top, and when it works, it's 9-0 to Liverpool.
Yeah, exactly. All right, then. We're going to talk about transfers in a minute, but to put up with that, you've got to listen to me try and sell the beer. So we have got our beer, Glenafric Brewery. It's a pleasure to work with them. They're absolutely fantastic. It is called We Go Again. It's a light lager. It's a pilsner. I had my first one of them on Friday, and thought it was thankfully delicious, because it would have been awful if it was. But it is. It's the absolute business. So if you go on Glenafric Brewery's website, it's available in some shops as well, but if you go to the Glenafric Brewery, it's Glen, as in Hoddle, but with only one N. Afric, as in AFFRIC, and then brewery, as in brewery, and then .com. And from there, you can buy quantities of our lager, which is called We Go Again. It's good, isn't it?
yeah, the can is absolutely beautiful as well. Shout out to Gabriel, our friend, who took that picture from a parade and has let us use it on the can. It's a stunning piece of art on a beautiful lager, and yours to buy if you are in the UK from the Galafic website. It's also some in if you're local in some local stockists as well, which we put on our Twitter. If you can't find it, message me and I'll tell you. But it's in loads of the Bargain Boozers and Claremont Farm and somewhere in Chester. I didn't realise it's going to be. I feel like it's a memory quiz all of a sudden.
Generation Gap. Yeah.
We were talking about Saturday.
No North House Party.
Yeah, we were talking about Saturday Night TV before. Beer Heroes. There we are.
In Chester.
Yeah.
You want the car, John?
It's good. I tell you what, it's good. We're over the water. I'm pleased about Claremont Farm on Manchester.
Claremont Farm's a good guy. Oh, Mersey Maiden Town as well, which is a brilliant shop.
It is.
Go in there and buy lots of things, including our beer.
Including our beer, absolutely. Do give it a try. It is delicious. The previous one was delicious. It's almost like Glenafric knew what they're doing. We buy other stuff from Glenafric as well.
They've won loads of awards.
And deserved each and every one of them. We'll do transfers then relatively quickly because there's other shows around for transfers, but we will do them semi-plausibly. Who do you want?
Is that at me?
Any of you? You caught my eye, which was an error.
Yeah. The idea that I'm in a position to say I want this player, I think, but it's not.
What sort of thing do you want?
Just... I mean, feels that Klopp's happy with, who thinks he can play for Liverpool in 3 years' time. That's my personal checklist.
So they're your criteria is just that.
Does Jurgen Klopp think he'll play for Liverpool in 3 years' time? Yes, sound. That'll do for me. That's all I particularly care about. I don't care whether he's six or an eight. If he, not necessarily still playing for Liverpool, just if he envisages a world where in 2026 this player plays for Liverpool, that's what I would like, basically.
I'm more quick fix. I don't think we need I don't think we need another player that's going to come and be ready in 3 years' time. I know what you're saying.
I'm not talking about being ready in 3 years' time. I was just
you want them ready now and also still available in 3 years.
I was talking about someone who is basically good enough to play for Liverpool for the long term, not like a prospect.
That's what Klopp sort of said, hasn't he? He find the right players, obviously hard, but he wants to get someone who can come in and play in the first team and start and not take 6 to 12 months to fit in. And I think that's sort of where my heads are. Because obviously we know, you know, we can talk, it's been spoke about to death about the midfield and the age and the injury proneness of them, if you want to call it that. So for me, it is just somebody who can slot in, who can play and fit into the system, as opposed to, you know, be someone who's going to come in and change it. Because I feel like there's been a little bit of a tweak this year, but I think if we've got someone to come in and fit in straight away and be an extra body, but who is that first team class, that'd do for me, to be honest.
That Leipzig link is quite interesting, though, I think, in terms of the style of our style of play and their style of play, and that seems to make a lot of sense. I don't know whether that is actually something that's going to happen, but that just seems
he's
like
he's got a year
sense.
Left on his contract, hasn't he? So it feels like a doable one. Yeah. I mean, that's the situation they've put themselves in by deciding late in the window that they need someone, if this is to be believed. And I think, you know, the evidence suggests that this is what's happened. It's the idea of I've seen Ruben Neves obviously linked and stuff like that. Wolves have got no real need to sell him, so I think it would take a lot of money to sort of take him away, and he'd be getting to the point of, and we've seen some of the fees going around for some players at the moment.
Can't believe what United are paying for this Ajax winger.
Yeah,
can't believe it.
Did he get 8 goals last season?
Yeah, 8 goals, 4 assists.
Yeah,
all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, look, he might be brilliant, but it is a lot of money. And listen, some sorts of the Premier League ones, Andy Gordon goes up 5 million every time he leaves his house. and so I think that it might come to the case of who's the sort of the most doable. I think, like Sean, I think there is a need to look at who's going to make an impact now as well. I completely take Phil's point in that, you know, we don't want to buy someone who we've already decided we're selling next summer. That would be kind of that. I don't think that is necessarily the best thing, and it's not very Liverpool either. It hasn't really worked for us. But at the same time, I think there must be, because the need is now. And listen, when you've got Virgil coming out to say we need another midfielder, that suggests that they're having conversations within the dressing room as well. And so I think that would weight in favour the likes of Tielemans or Neves, who at least know the league, not necessarily know the systems or what our midfielders ask for. So I think that needs to come into it. But, you know, we talked about the World Cup before. Like, someone who isn't going to the World Cup is a benefit for this season, because you can almost say, right, you've got a couple of months now where we're gonna, you know, you will need to play some games of football, don't get me wrong, but don't stress too much. But in the World Cup, we're really going to work with you and the other players who aren't going, because it's not like everyone's going to get 5 weeks off. No. Do you know what I mean? Like, they'll still be sort of training, they'll probably set up a couple of friendlies up or something.
They're
going like
away,
that.
They're going to go to Canada.
Yeah, are they? Brilliant. So you've got that, and so I think that's a real benefit of this season that hasn't existed in the other ones, really. That you say, okay, well, some of the lads are going to go away, but James Milner's here, Mo Salah's here, you know, there's plenty of others. Joe Gomez is going. Sorry about him.
Shimacastle, you'll have a lovely time with Shimacastle.
Well, there is actually quite a few when you go through them, more than you think. Mm. It's a pre-season for Naby Keita. and so these sorts of situations that you're in, I think sort of benefits us if it is someone who isn't going.
Yeah. So what sort of do you think it is? Because my thing is, if we're doing this, which it looks like we're doing, I think we've only got two players who play where Elliot plays. And one of them's Elliot, and the other one's Oxlade-Chamberlain, and he's very injured.
Mm.
So we're being linked at the minute. There's a lot of who wants a 68 and 86, you know what I mean? But for me, one of the things I'm thinking is if you're playing 4-2-1-3, and I think, now the flip side of that is, I think there's a chance that in the one, he might have his eye on Firmino, he might have his eye on Jota, he might think, you know, he might use Carvalho there, don't get me wrong. So I'm not absolutely wedded to this. But the one thing I do think is that if he is, we've changed Jones, I think, into a very responsible midfielder, and I'm fine with it. But we've got effectively six lads who make up options for the two in this, who play where Fabinho or Henderson played there against Bournemouth, very close together, if we're honest about it. Quite robust. We've got six footballers for that bit. So I'm a bit like, I think we've only got two for the other bit. Although, as I say, it could be that the role changed. It could be that it is more 4-2-4 at times. It might be that that's less pronounced for some games, for European games. It might go back to more of a 4-3-3. I am just, as I have been all the way through the summer, if there is a big arrow of, I don't feel like we're stocked there. It is there, but he's not being linked with any of them, so what the fuck do I know?
Yeah, well, we've done the squad video a couple of times, haven't we, which we'll do again when the transfer window goes, when we go through the midfield, and me and you did do that. We talked about the midfield, and we talked about them, you know, being a lot of numbers. There was a lot of midfielders, but A, the reliability, and B, you know, is the right combination of skills. And when you go through it like that, we sort of decided there wasn't. But because we're doing it in a semi-sensible way on a video, we're not screaming our heads off on Twitter. Probably we didn't want a midfielder. But do you know what I mean? It's like, I think if you could get someone... listen, I love a midfielder who can burst through. And I think if we could find one of those who's able to be combative as well, you know, that 3 months that Chamberlain has when he first joins, up to sort of the Roma game, someone like that would be perfect.
I agree with that. I think you do wonder if you're able to take advantage of changing the situation. For example, I know that Ibrahim Sangare at PSV is thought of quite highly by a lot of people. They failed to get in the Champions League. Is that something that you can take advantage of? And obviously you couldn't do that a week ago because they were still in the Champions League. And maybe now there's something like that. I had a look at the teams that got knocked out of the Champions League, and there was only really PSV who had anyone you'd even consider looking at. There was him and there was Veerman, I think, as a midfielder, who they both look maybe someone you could take advantage of. But
Linfield, of any good lads? Shout out to Singleton there. Poor Jordan.
That was horrible, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Jordan does a lot of the video for us, massive Linfield fan, and he's still in bits about it, to be quite honest with you. I'm worried he's going to look for a change of profession. He's finding football so hard. Lehmer, Berg, Tielemans, Llorente. I think Llorente's interesting. But then I think that that's where Saul doesn't do Llorente many favours, I would argue.
Did you just sign him? He was big last summer. Yeah, I mean, make a lot of people very happy.
Well, 12 months ago. Yeah. Make the people very happy from 12 months ago.
Like the Labour Party, though, you're trying to solve 12 months ago's problems.
Absolutely, yes. All right. That is transfers. There'll be lots and lots to come all the way through the week. I'm expecting something to break today. We're recording this on Bank Holiday Monday. I'm expecting something to break today. I reckon Joycey was just on Concert Square last night, to be honest with you.
Did you expect something like 9 o'clock this morning? Because I did.
I didn't.
Pin tweet stuff. That's fun.
Yeah. We love that, don't we?
Yeah, Liverpool haven't got a pin tweet at the moment.
Was 9-0 on Saturday? No pin tweet.
Yeah.
Side
I wasn't even keeping an eye on pin tweets. I feel like I'm missing. I don't know. I'm not doing my job properly. I did no pin tweets.
It's like checking who's just followed Liverpool on Instagram.
Yeah.
It's that
I'm
on that. Isn't it?
I'll track the planes, Phil. I'm not aware.
Yeah, yeah.
I just pinned tweets, wasn't on me, mate.
Newcastle then, 3 or 4 minutes, very punchy on them. They're suddenly beset by injuries, Phil. It's fortunate timing for us. There's every chance that Sam Maximan, Callum Wilson and Bruno Guimaraes won't be able to play against Liverpool. I think if there's any risk, if you're Eddie Howe, the smart thing is not to have them play against Liverpool as well at Anfield, because there's a long season to come. Howe's actually had that before, quite literally with Callum Wilson, where he rushed him back for a game against Liverpool when he was Bournemouth manager, and lost him for a period of time. It's nice that injuries are working in our favour on this one. I'm not expecting Liverpool to change. I'm not expecting a change in the starting lineup, to be honest with you. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I don't think Liverpool changed the starting lineup. I expect the bench will be stronger from what the manager said, but Newcastle not quite being as at their best is no bad thing for us.
Yeah, I don't think we'll have any changes either. I think it's
the
nice
only thing is Elliot, isn't it?
Yeah,
if you know, have a look at him.
It sounded like he'd be. I got the impression that if it was 0-0, he just stayed on from what they said, but we'll see. It's nice to be in a position where we're the fresher team in a variety of ways, because they obviously play last midweek and we don't. So they've had that midweek. It's also 3 away games as well. They play Tranmere away, they play Wolves away, now they're playing Liverpool away. So they've got the travelling as well on top of this. And ultimately, if you'd have said to me, you can take 3 players out of Newcastle's strongest team, which ones are you taking out? I am quite literally taking out Callum Wilson, Alan Saint-Maximin.
The lad and you like that.
Bruno Guimaraes.
So you'd be ready to start?
He's not a work permit yet, has he?
Well, but he would have started him, supposedly. Yeah. It's only the work permit why he didn't start him against Wolves. So I think he'll start him.
He'll be there, but ultimately, he's, you know, the situation.
It's calling everyone lad.
Yeah.
Like a new 5-a-side team.
If the ref books me, what's my name?
Yeah. It is one that works for us. They played Sunday as well, and also they have a 100-minute game, which is part of why it looks as though Sam Maximin might have injured himself, Sean. You know, they've got an intense game. It's on the line until 100 minutes on top of everything else. We've got 3 games in Merseyside in a week because of the Merseyside derby, and as I say, I think the subs bench will be stronger for Wednesday, and then there might be a couple of changes for Saturday. That's how I think he'll do it.
Yeah, I agree, and we might start our brand new midfielder that you said we're signing today, so that's really good news.
Not just as news today.
Yeah. I think it is very fortuitous how it's worked out, because after that City game I was really worried about this fixture, given the state that we were in, thinking, oh no, this could be a, you know, not the easiest of midweeks at home. I think Newcastle have started really well. Saint-Maximin as well has been really good, hasn't he? So for him not to be playing is a massive positive. I think there may be some changes, just because, well, there's not many changes to make, but I think maybe Tsimikas or something might come in, just to freshen things up a little bit and give him the time, because I think he's been really impressive every time he's...
So almost do Tsimikas 60, Robertson 30, because he keeps doing the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. Do that and get Robertson, you know, a bit, or keep Robertson fresh for the derby. I think there'll be a little bit of that, but yeah, I expect it to be more or less the same, and you know, it'd be hard to drop someone after winning 9-0, wouldn't it?
I think he'll go same 11 as long as Elliot's okay, and like Phil says, when they were talking afterwards, it did seem that it was, you know, they just also want to have a look at it. So I think, you know, if Elliot's fine to start again, I think throw the same 11. I'll tell him to go exactly, you know, the same again, and you know, we can use our subs again if we're sort of able to. But I'm just made up we're playing Wednesday, to be honest with you. Having waited weeks between games, between now, you know, it's great that we had a great time at Anfield. We're like halfway between the last game and the next game. Isn't that great? Because I would feel like I was only just at
Bournemouth. That is a good
point. So I can do that. Brilliant.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
What time are you out, Phil? Wednesday.
I've got this can.
Where'd you get it from, Neil?
What time does Glenafric Brewery open? Because there's an excellent tap room over in Birkenhead.
You don't have to tell me.
You get the ferry over. I get us a bit lost. It's not a great walk.
It's a crazy adventure. It's a sunny day. And it'll be a great time to go to the Leisure Peninsula.
Yeah.
4:30 and answer your questions.
And it's closer than you think, by the way. Bebbington, closer than Childwall to town. Just bear it in mind.
You can't swim there. You can't walk there, though, can you?
Can't walk there.
You can literally swim there. You can't die, but...
Yeah, you can have a go. Are we going to win? Do we all think we're going to win? But I feel like we're all very confident.
Three wins in a week.
More so, if I'm looking at that team, there's no Sam Maximin there, who's a doubt at the minute, whereas the other two are nailed on, categorically out, then definitely, because you've taken away the way they hit you.
Could be 10.
What about 11?
Sean Pepe is everything. It's been the Anfield Wrap this week. Download the app. You know how it all works. We hope we're flying. Everyone loves a comeback story. Sports Social Podcast Network.